Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a story of America's bloodiest prison, told by the people who lived it, both inside and outside its gates. The brutal history, as you've never heard it before, from its origin as a slave plantation to its gradual growth as the bloodiest maximum security prison in America. To those outside its gates, it's known as Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola. But to those who have spent time inside its gates, it's known as Bloody Angola.
Come with us as we take you through the gates and give you a first-hand look at not only the stories of the stabbings, rapes, executions, escapes, and murders you won't find on any TV show or the internet, but also the murders, abductions, attacks, and hostage situations of the staff and their families, otherwise known by the convicts as free people.
Bloody Angola is a comprehensive, no-holds-barred podcast. It takes you on a journey through time from its inception as a slave plantation to America's largest maximum security prison, where 80% of its population will die inside the wire.
Get mentally prepared, sit back, and listen as we cover these stories in detail
in ways you've never heard before from people that lived it, breathed it, and died with it. Bloody Angola. Warning, Bloody Angola is a podcast covering actual events and is intended for mature audiences.
The subject matter discussed in no way reflects the personal opinions of the host or sponsors of this podcast.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we would sing you "We Wish You a Merry Christmas."
Yes, if I carry a tune in a bucket.
You listen to this, it's just a few days before Christmas, and we have some. We didn't want to not bring y'all anything at all,
right?
Because we're all about gift giving,
right? And so these episodes, we're about to tell you, be the gift keeps on giving.
That's right. You listen to it as many times as you want all year, right,
all year long. So we want to wish all y'all and your loved ones a very, very Merry Christmas. And I'm sure you're all traveling and going to see family and loved ones and all that good stuff. And we're doing the same thing. So
that's right. We really enjoyed and loved the response that we got when we did our little swap. It's probably been about a month ago or so.
Right. But we did it Thanksgiving week.
Yeah.
Same concept. So today we're going to do it again.
We're going to do it again.
And for Bloody Angola, we're going to take one out of the vault for Real Life, Real Crime and give it to you so you can have something to listen to from Bloody Angola and be our present to you.
So tell us a little bit about the one we're going to give these awesome Bloody Angolites.
I think, y'all, that this one ultimately ends up with a prison term, but it's one of my – we've got one of the stories I got so much positive response out of. It's kind of a little bit outside of the box in police work, et cetera. But I was actually a victim of a crime, and the end result was prison time. So it kind of goes with Bloody Angola. I'm pretty sure you didn't go to Angola, but it's, the name of the episode is called Hell or Jail. And
one of my favorites.
Yeah. So it's just every good cop operates in the gray area sometimes. And that's what happens in the story. And I think that you're going to like it. If that's judged by the past response we got to the episode, which is very, very positive.
Exactly. So look forward to that. And we did want to go ahead and update you real quick. We had brought up in a past episode about the juveniles that had got, they were moving. These were juvenile offenders that were not the best acting juveniles, I guess you could say. And
yeah, it's not, they weren't, it wasn't a hug a thug program.
Not by any means.
If you remember it, or if you don't, they had a huge problem now, or they're having a huge problem now with juvenile offenders in these, they don't call them prisons, they call them the detention facilities. But they're escaping, they're doing violent crimes, and doing all these horrible things. And the places they're housed in are in disrepair. The security wise are not good, and they're committing all these horrible crimes. So the state had to come up with a response to it. And what they did was they decided they were going to start housing these problematic juveniles in Bloody Angola.
Yes.
Which is fucking illegal by the definition of law. There's no a juvenile offender or prisoner, but they say offender, I guess we got to be politically correct, or juvenile detainees are not even supposed to be in the vicinity of any adults, especially adult prisoners. And, well, they decided to house them on the old death row at Angola. You do that. Well, the problem with that is they're still in Angola.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you get yard time and the fences, they actually had to go in and prepare this place. They put drapings over the fences so adult inmates couldn't see in and communicate with the juveniles, and juveniles couldn't communicate back. Now, I'm sure some of these juveniles' family members are doing life in Bloody Angola, and I'm sure some of these juveniles aren't far when they move them here. They're not going to be far from the where they're going to spend the rest of their life anyway, because they're going to get out and they're going to commit more serious crimes. And a lot of them, when I worked at juvenile detention facility, a lot of them, as I became a detective in law enforcement, I locked them up as they became adults. So some of them are going to make fine trustees one day in Angola, I'm sure, but that doesn't change the fact that the state of Louisiana is now housing these problem detainees or juveniles in the old death row at Angola.
Yeah.
But it happened, and they fought it in the courts and everything else, and we're going to tell you about that.
That's right. So it's supposed to be about 24 young inmates they plan to house. And as Woody said, it's on the grounds of Louisiana State Penitentiary in Angola. It's not, they're not going to have them in the same cell with adults, but they will be housed there. Whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, it's kind of up to each individual person to decide.
Right. Well, I mean, to me, putting them in the old death row, that's kind of freaky. Yeah, if I was a kid, but
scare them straight.
Hopefully a percentage of them will get straight. But y'all were talking about kids from the age 12 to 17. Now, most of the time, the 17-year-olds go to a regular prison now.
Big boy prison.
Big boys in prison, that's right. They graduate. But these are not kids that are in there for truancy or disobeying their parents. They're in there for rape, murder, armed robbery, you know, whatever, bad shit.
Okay. And they couldn't control them in the regular environment that they were in inside these juvenile detention centers. Yeah. So that was the whole point. These are like the worst of the worst inside those juvenile detention centers. Because as you know, when you're young, you're very influential. A lot of people, a lot of young men and women. Right. And so what happens is if you got a bunch of young kids clowning, for lack of a better term, inside the detention center, it's almost like a cancer. It just spreads. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, you lose total control. Right. And this particular detention center has lost total control.
Right.
And so they're taking them and moving them.
We're talking about Bridge City, y'all, out in New Orleans. But really, it's not limited to that. Baton Rouge has had so many escapes from the one out by the airport and all that.
Ryan Airport.
And attacking the officers and everything else. But it is what it is. The state got the old death row prepared. They covered up the fences. They did all this stuff. And they moved the first group of juveniles, at least.
Yep. So just wanted to update you on that. They are there. They're at Angola.
Yep. And you know, even though it was fault, y'all, and, you know, the bleeding heart liberals say, oh, they can't do this, it's so bad. But Judge Shelley Dix, and I'm going to read this in her paper real quick. Judge Shelley Dix, y'all, is the one who certified me in all U.S. federal courts as an expert witness in law enforcement matters. She's very tough, but very fair. But she heard the lawsuit, and basically they're saying that, you know, it's, you know, you locking up kids in cells in Angola. She said that is an untenable. She said, but the threat of the harm the youngsters present to themselves and others is intolerable. And she said the untenable must yield to the intolerable. Basically, this is the you know, they're badasses, and by leaving them in this facility where they've done all these crimes and everything else, then locking them up in Angola is the lesser of the two evils, basically. Yes. So this facility we're talking about, the first ones are being shipped from, that had a recent rage or violence at the facility. And it was located on the west bank of Jefferson Parish, and it has seen more than two dozen detainees escape since April of 2021. But one of them, y'all, last July, escaped, carjacked somebody, and shot him in uptown New Orleans. And he was eventually chased down and caught after crashing the stolen vehicle. So you're dealing with some bad cats. They ship them to Angola. It actually happened. We talked to you about it on a previous episode, but it's the real deal.
That's right. So there's your update on that, folks, because if we do anything, we want to keep you updated.
Right.
And there's a lot of updates still yet to come.
Yeah, and I don't imagine they'll be having the best Christmas in the old death row, but it is what it is. And
very interesting, Woody, that you bring that up, because, you know, in the research that I was doing kind of for this episode and what we would talk about at the beginning of it is Christmas time is actually the worst time of the year for suicides in prisons.
Absolutely. The holidays, especially Christmas holidays. And I work many of them.
Very depressing time for inmates.
And I mean, you know, you thinking about when you're a little kid and you got that Red Ryder BB gun, don't shoot your eye out.
Well, you'll shoot your eye out.
And then I guess you just can't handle it, right? Or maybe you're missing mama's ham or some shit, and then you decide to hang yourself or slit your wrist or whatever. But, hey, you know what? I didn't put them in. Well, I put a lot of them in prison. I didn't make them commit the crimes they committed to go into prison, and that's part of being locked up.
Famous song I once heard was, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. That's right. So
anyway, that's your update, but we hope you enjoy the episode of Hell or Jail. We love y'all. Wish you a Merry Christmas. Hope Santa Claus is good to you.
Hey, Woody, we also want to mention the live event Saturday.
Sold out.
And we opened up a Friday.
The Bloody and Gold Live, and it's going to be, you better be 18. Well, you have to be 18 to get in. They will have alcohol sales and food sales. And
look, we got sombreros.
Sombreros.
Tommy coming in the house.
Fire Mexican restaurant.
One of the best people.
Yeah, a great guy. And they'll be there, and we'll have some alcohol sales.
Oh, yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I got to mention this. We've got it's actually really the cutest like camper you've ever seen in your life. Everything lays down in it and it becomes a full bar. They'll have a full bar in there. Everything from beer to mixed drinks.
Beer.
Yeah.
Beer.
Yeah. Woody,
I love beer.
I have Woody at beer.
Beer.
They also have the best mimosas you could ever drink, but get this, they're making a special drink just for Bloody Angola's, just for Bloody Angola Live. It is going to be called the Bloody Angola, and it's a special Bloody Mary.
That is, whoa, I love Bloody Marys.
Yeah.
Bloody Marys help me after my nights of beer. So I can have another night of beer. That's
love
awesome.
That.
That's awesome. Man.
Yeah.
A Bloody Angola Bloody Mary.
So order you the Bloody Angola.
And y'all got to remember, y'all, I want you to know this is different than the Crew Bash where we have, hundreds and hundreds of people. This is a very intimate, private setting at Southeastern's campus in Walker. And I've been fortunate enough to do three live shows there. It only sits 150 people, but stadium seating, everybody has a comfortable seat, and you're right in our face, right? And the store is going to be fire, the drinks and the food all available. And once we tell the story, we're going to stay and sign autographs and take pictures with every single person. And even if you don't want our autograph, don't want to take a picture, guess what? I want to meet you. Jim wants to meet you. We're going to be there until the last person leaves.
That's right. And we'll have Bloody Angola swag. Look, everybody's been asking me about Bloody Angola swag. Right. We're going to have some there, a few t-shirts and some other stuff. We're going to pre-sell some stuff that you can wear actually to the event. It'd be right. Like, think of it like a concert t-shirt, for podcast.
Right.
So check that out. It is the 13th and 14th of January. That's a Friday and a Saturday. Saturday sold out.
So
Friday, we've got about half left.
Friday,
and it'll 13th. Be sold out.
It's going to sell, y'all. Yeah. Give it, and give it for the gift of Christmas or whatever you want to, but don't wait because the mad response we got the first, and that's why we were doing the second night. And they were, Crystal Hardison and the Southeastern were gracious enough to give us that. But Saturday night sold out. Way like hotcakes, right? Friday night, selling out the same way. You're going to miss out. We got the Friday night because so many people were, I guess, hesitating or what do you call it, procrastinating. And then they realized, holy shit, they sold out.
Yeah.
And so like, oh, can you do another one? So they hooked us up. So we're going to have Friday the 13th. We still have tickets for sale. 2023, January, Southeastern.
Livingston Center, which is located in Walker, Louisiana.
Yeah.
So you can get tickets online. And look, we revamped the whole Southeastern system when it comes to tickets. Right. And now you can order as many tickets as you want in one transaction. Right. So
where before they had it on, you can only buy one ticket at a time. Now they and thank them for doing that. They hooked us up. But y'all, this professional sound, the room is very intimate anyway, but professional sound and lighting, everything. Everything's going to be top notch, first class, VIP. Get your tickets.
Yeah. And I can guarantee you a story.
Oh, shit. The story. I'm going to tell you what, be 18 and be ready. Have your
jaw dropped.
Your socks rocked. Right. And, anyway, but it's a true story and it's a story that needs to be told.
So thank you very much to everybody who bought Saturday's tickets. We sold that puppy out. Fridays, we got about half left. That's it. So get them while they're hot.
Get them
while they're available.
How do they get them?
Easy way to get them. You can go to Southeastern, www.southeastern.edu, and you can go straight to that website and you just pull up lifelong learning and it'll show it where the first thing on that page. And you'll see it. You follow the instructions from there. Or you can go right to the Bloody Angola Facebook page. Right. Just scroll down. Every day we kind of repost that post, and it'll have the link. Makes it easy. Any questions, just shoot us a message on Facebook. Absolutely. We can answer it.
Absolutely. We'll take care of it. And y'all, thank you for everything. And please remember to like and subscribe to Bloody Angola. Leave us a review if you will and all that good podcaster shit.
I got a little mail in the other day from a listener of Bloody Angola. We wanted to shout him out. It was very, very nice of him. He sent us some French Settlement Roasting Company coffee.
Y'all, made right here in the Livingston Parish in the town of French Settlement, right? This is love. Always love when fans send us gifts. This is really special. I love to drink coffee anyway, but the label says, not only made in Louisiana, but it says, may your coffee kick in before reality does.
One of the best slogans ever.
Right? And look, this coffee is 100% organic, and it comes in this great package. It's sealed up. It's a pull tab to open. Mine is Brazilian medium dark roast, which has an initial sweetness and a fruit followed by baker's chocolate and toasted walnut flavor.
Sounds lovely. And I have Colombian medium dark roast, and it has a little bit of citrus in it.
Right.
Caramel milk chocolate with bright acidity and a creamy body.
That's love, y'all. And hey, we really want to thank him for sending this to us. Y'all go check them out. French Settlement Roasting Company. Can't wait to try it. And actually, we'll give you an update after we try it.
That's right.
We just got it in, but it's so cool. Thank you so much. French Settlement Roasting Company is priceless. Love it.
Join the Chase team.
Yes.
Because we've got several different versions of this we're going to be reading. It's a little bonus episode for Chase team members. But Woody's going to read "Twas the Night Before Christmas," but it's a prison version that he's going to read you right now. And we've got several versions of not only that, but some other fun stuff for holidays that we're going to be doing for bonus Chase team members.
And Chase team members, thank you so much. We appreciate each and every one of y'all. Y'all, if you want to be a Chase team member, the link will be in the show notes or go to our social media or wherever. But you get a bonus episodes every month. And commercial free early releases and all that good stuff. So we appreciate y'all. But now I'm going to read this one, but Chase team members, you're going to get some really, really funny ones.
Yeah.
So 'twas the night before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and here in my cell, I think to myself, this must surely be hell. The prison's in lockdown at the warden's insistence. There is no one to talk to, and there'll be no resistance. Each inmate is locked in his cell for the night. No turkey, no sleigh bells, no warm candlelight. With my head in my hands, I sit in the cold and remember past Christmases, silver and gold. The sleep would bring dreams and memories of home, but I sit here in silence, forsaken, alone. When all of a sudden, in the darkness, a cry, a heart-wrenching sob, and I softly ask why. Why don't they visit? Why don't they write? Why am I here on this Christmas Eve night? My hands grip the bar. I think hard to reply, but there's nothing to say. There's no answer to why. And just when it seems there is only despair, I remember that someone somewhere out there cares. I turn back to that most precious gift of them all, a handwritten letter so tenderly scrawled. My hand trembles a moment. I take out the page, the paper all yellowed and crinkled with age. I've read it so often, I know every word. To those who don't know, it would seem quite absurd. But I treasure each sentence, reread every line. The message so simple, I hope you're fine. And I feel myself smiling as I get to the end. I'll be here forever, forever, amen.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas. And happy birthday, Jesus.
Yeah, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door. You're running so
everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. Thank you for joining and listening. Appreciate each and every one of you lifers. Real Life, Real Crime is rocketing, growing every day, and it's because of y'all liking and sharing us. I appreciate that. Stay tuned at the end of today's episode, and you'll get to hear some updates on some things and some things that we have going on. But let's get to the episode. And the name of the episode is Hell or Jail. I don't really remember what year it was. I think it must have been like 2004. I was a detective with the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. And people ask me all the time, I get the question all the time, how do you handle like the PTSD from all the bad shit that you've seen, right? And I tell them that I really don't think about it. I guess I'm one of the ones that's blessed that can block things out. My way of dealing with it, it was by going hunting or fishing or whatever. And so stay with me. There's a reason I'm telling you this. But all the time when I was off, that's what I did, hunted and fished. But I always did it with other cops. And I think when I started as a rookie cop, Brother Pete Charlay, who had been a cop forever, but he also runs Charlotte Funeral Home in Zachary. He told me, he said, my one piece of advice to you is keep at least one friend that's not a cop. And I was like, why? And he said, because you need somebody that can keep you grounded on the outside of law enforcement. He said, because all cops end up hanging out with other cops because they're the only people that get them. And I didn't really catch that at this time, but the years have gone by in my career and I had no friends, but the guys that I work with, right? And the girls that I work with. And so on our days off, we did everything together. We hung together. We, you know, worked whatever together. We hunted together. We fished together. We partied together. And this was no exception. And I can tell you the month was December, whatever year it was. The month was December because it was hunting season. And I knew that I got off that Friday and I had planned to go up to Red River Wildlife Management Area, which is at the time they didn't have the new bridge built between St. Francisville and New Roads. So it took me over 3 hours to get to this hunting spot. Now, what was there
was Brian Paul Smith, who's now the chief deputy, and Ben Bourgeois, who's now the chief of the detectives for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. They had a little camp on the outskirts of this management area, this hunting area. And we would go up there and do what we do, right? And I guess that's how my PTSD got released, because we would go up there. I'd load my truck up and with all the essentials, which is my firearm, a little bit of camouflage, and tons of beer, and my four-wheeler, and more beer, right? And so load up, take my time, drive up to the hunting camp, get there, everybody's there, you unload your stuff, and start drinking, right? And that's what we did. And we always had a fire. A couple of rules at the hunting camp: you always going to have cold beer, and you're always going to have a great meal, right? Because a lot of the guys I worked with, coon asses, and y'all, coon ass is not a derogatory term. That's what Cajuns call Cajuns. And but everybody could cook something. So you get there, you start drinking, and you get around the fire, and you're telling the cop stories. And I guess that's how we decompress, right? And, you drink through the night, and at some point you go to bed, and you get up in the morning, you go hunting. You come back from hunting, you get you some leftover jambalaya from the night before or whatever was cooked, and then you take your little nap, and you go hunt again in the evening. So it was a good time, and I'd taken off the whole week. And this would have been right after the Toys for Tots, or whatever Willie called it, the Christmas Crusade, after the presents were delivered, so probably the week before Christmas. And a bunch of us took off that week to go up there and spend the time and hunt, right? And no spouses, just the guys. So go up there, chilling, been waiting on this week for however long. And we got the first night went by. And then the second night, and like I said, we drank and ate good. I don't remember what it was, but the next morning, now listen, this place is so rural. There's no cell phone reception at this camp. I mean, none. You had to drive like 4 miles to the levee and get up on top of the levee at the Red River levee to get reception. And I remember, like, before I was married back then, Brian Paul and I were up there, and he had to call his wife. So we had to drive out to the levee in the evening time. After the hunt, and he was on the phone with his wife. She was an awesome friend to me. She always treated me like family, but she didn't cut me any slack. But he was on the phone with her and saying his goodnights or whatever. And I said, "Hey, you tell your wife, call my wife and tell her I won't be calling this evening while I wasn't married." And Brian's wife responded, "She said, if you had called your wife a few more times, you may still have one, right?" But anyway, no cell phone reception, but the pagers worked. And we always had to have our pagers on. Willie's rule was, with the blood hit the ground and everybody gets called out, you got to come home no matter what, right? So the next morning after the morning hunt, I get back to the camp and getting ready to get something to eat, and my pager goes off, and it's the radio room. It says 1021, you're 42, 911. I'm like, what? And 1021 is call, y'all. And they were telling me to call my 42, which is my house, which means my wife at the time, in 911. I'm like, holy shit, right? So I know it's not good, and it's going to be bad. And I'm thinking somebody died or something, right? So I had to jump in my truck, haul ass down to the levee, get up on top of the levee. And we had the Nextel phones back then. That's how long ago it was. The flip Nextels. And I called, and she answered, and she starts just reaming my ass. I'm screaming. I'm like, whoa. I said, settle down. Tell me what's going on. She said, everybody in her neighborhood got robbed last night. All this and da da da, all your neighbors got robbed, and we look like idiots, and nothing's getting done about it. And get your ass home now and solve this case. And I'm like, what? I said, let me make a phone call. And so I hung up because I want to listen to all that. And I call the radio room, and they were like, yeah, man, there's like been like 20 reports of vehicle burglaries on your street that happened last night. And I'm like, fuck. And I said, who's the detectives? And it's the no detective has been assigned yet because they're working a shit hot case, some type of rape or something. I don't remember what it was. She said, so uniformed patrol guys have been getting called out there. As the neighbors would wake up through the day and realize their shit had been burglarized, then they would call in to have the report made. Now, on a big burglary like that, y'all, if a bunch of vehicles get hit, usually the detectives, at some point, the uniform guys are calling the detectives out so they can start fingerprinting and shit like that. It rained that night, the night before. I remember that. But the detectives were busy on a priority case. It was a rape case, and they were actively working it. So a uniform guy would go out and take a report from whoever the victim was. Then that victim may tell their neighbor to check their shit or whatever. And the uniform guys, as uniform guys got dispatched out, they went. So a bunch of different guys went, and it got bigger as the day went along. So I called called back and got another earful from my spouse at the time. And I was like, fuck, I got to go home. Right. And so I go back to the camp and I told him, I packing my shit up, and they're like, where are you going? I said, my neighborhood got hit, and there's no detective working the case because they're out on another case, and I got to go home. I'll never live it down from my spouse. I mean, just we'll leave it at that. The person hadn't been my spouse for many, many years. But anyway, so I had to go home, and there was 3 hours. I had a bit of a hangover. It was a 3-hour ride, like a slow ride in the hell. I know I'm going to catch hell when I go through the door. And no fault of my own, it was just the way it was back then in that relationship. And so I get there and I pull into my truck, and yeah, it starts immediately when I walk in the door. I'm like, what in the fuck do you want me to do? I said, I'm not Superman, motherfucker. I wasn't here last night. I said, I just drove 3 hours in, and I'll see what I can do. And so I called in. Detectives still were not available, and she had a list of her neighbors, which were her friends. Now, let me tell you about the street. It was Parham Avenue. I lived at 7917 Parham Avenue, third house on the right. And what reminded me of the story, y'all, was when I did the episode on first of the month. That was Parham Avenue. And actually, the house that the guy was selling the dope out of that we raided was my next door neighbor, but it wasn't the same people. Those people had sold and moved out. Now, Parham is what they call Hunstock West. Hunstock East was across 16, big neighborhood, lots of streets and all this shit, big houses. But Parham was a straight line road in. You turned off of 16 and it went straight back, and just past my house, where we set up on the first of the month I told you about, there's a cul-de-sac off to the right there. But you go to the inn, and the Parham is probably 3/4 mile long, maybe a half mile. I don't know. It wasn't that long. And you go to the inn, and there's a cul-de-sac on the back end. That's it. Houses, like any neighborhood now, the new whatever neighborhoods, houses are pretty close together. All of them are nice homes, very very quiet street. I don't even think I had a house key to my house. I never locked my house. But on the way home, I was really shitting myself because I'm thinking, holy fuck. I wondered, did I lock my unmarked unit? Because it must have been 2004, because I was still on the SWAT team or SRT team. And in my unmarked unit, I had my AR-15, my tactical shotgun, all my SWAT gear. And I'm thinking, fuck. But I didn't say that. But one of the first things I did when I got home is made sure my unit was locked, right? So my shit was good. But Parham, quiet. You didn't turn on that street unless you had business on the street, okay? Great neighborhood, and we knew everybody. And as a matter of fact, my ex's office manager lived in the at the back of the first cul-de-sac right past my house. And shit, man, everybody got hit. Then I said, the second thing I checked was my spouse's SUV, because I knew she never locked it. And we had a pistol in there that her father had given, and it was a Colt Police Special, an old, old, old revolver with the long barrel one. I'm talking about like from the 1930s or some shit. It was older and dirt. But I went out there and checked it, and sure enough, that some bitch was gone, and some change at the and a little bit of cash that she kept in the thing. I'm like, oh shit, now I gotta tell her that we got hit too, right? And so go in, you know, tell her, and somebody else is calling. She's on the phone with another neighbor or the office manager, whoever. I go in. I'm not staying, trying to hang out in the house and listen to this bullshit. I got to take the bull by the horns. No detective's been assigned. Now it's later in the evening, probably 2 o'clock, something like that. And so I went in and threw on some detective's clothes and put on my badge, my gun, and I jet out the door. I get in my unmarked unit, and I go down. I talk to a couple of the neighbors, and y'all, what I noticed was every complainant, every victim had left their shit unlocked, right? And but they had entered some people's sheds in their yards, like some weed eaters were stolen, a chainsaw, and all the stuff that was stolen out of the vehicles, the stereos. There was another pistol that was stolen from somebody else. It was a newer 9mm. All the shit that was stolen was what? It wasn't secure, right? A lock keeps an honest man honest. Now, I know that nobody had cameras on it. They didn't have Ring doorbells back then. Of course, I did look to see if anybody had cameras, but nobody had cameras. But I did not believe that somebody came in there in a vehicle and hit this long row of homes. And now most of the houses that were hit were on my side of the street. So it showed to me that the perpetrators, it was obviously more than one. And I mean, it was like 20 vehicles and sheds and shit like that. So it showed me it was obviously more than one perpetrator, but also they only took what they could carry, which means more than likely they didn't have a vehicle in there. All right. So also, what time of the year is it? It's the holiday season. Who's out of school? Your kids, your teenagers and stuff like that. Right. And burglaries always went up around the holiday time. So the addicts got to buy presents too. And people steal shit, and a lot of them steal it and trade it for dope. A lot of them steal it and sell it and, you know, buy Christmas presents. But so I'm riding around and I'm looking. And now on Parham, if you're riding towards the end of Parham, away from my house, away from Highway 16, on the left-hand side is a major road on the outside of the neighborhood. On the right-hand side where the two cul-de-sacs were, there's a big wooden fence that runs the whole backside of Hunstock West, whatever you want to call it, Parham Avenue. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to see what I could shake up, right? So I go back out to 16 and I hang out if they came in from that street side, there's nothing I could do. They could have parked at the car wash down the street and came in, but I said, I want to start on my side of the street where the wooden fence was. And so go out to 16 and hang a left, and then hang the first left, and I forget the name of the road, the first left, and it goes back in there now behind Parham Avenue. And it was like, back at the time, it was just a couple like track houses and some trailers back there, and it kind of made a circle. But when you turn onto it, now, I'm in an unmarked white Crown Vic, y'all, and it's obviously it's a cop car, right? And the lights are on the dash. So I turn in, and you come down to this little T, and I'm going from memory. You come down to this little T, but right in the middle of the T is a trailer that's facing me in the end, perpendicular, I guess you would call it, not horizontal. It's facing me, and there's like three big mean ass dogs chained up in the yard. There's no driveway. It's a dirt lot, and it's a shitty trailer. And standing out in the yard are two males, and they weren't kids by any means. I mean, probably early 20s. But they're standing out there smoking cigarettes, and I'm looking at them, and they looking at me. And the first thing I see, they recognize the car as a probable cop car, right? And then their eyes got kind of big, and then I'm like, oh shit, here we go. But they could just be dopers. You know, I didn't have anything solid to go on. So I rolled my window down and I made eye contact with them, and they never broke eye contact. Now the street goes around, and as I'm going around, and when I had to look back towards the road, broke the eye contact. They jet. They go inside the trailer. I'm like, oh, shit, business is about to pick up. But I wasn't sure. And I didn't have shit to go on, right? So I made the loop, and it comes back around on the other side of that trailer. So I'm looking at it hard. I'm scoping it hard. And I'm looking, and they had light blue curtains in the window. I'll never forget it. And I saw the curtains move, and then they closed. So they were watching for me to come back around. Well, fuck yeah. Business is about to pick up, right? And this is not 50 yards from the back of the wooden fence on Parham. So I ain't had shit to go on. And you know, I just was going to reach out there. I pulled into the little dirt yard. The dogs were chained in the, I guess they were not Rottweilers or Pitbulls. They were mean ass dogs, but they had big chains on them, like fighting dogs they do in the country. And the dogs were roar, 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 roar. But I made sure that I could walk up to the trailer where the dogs wouldn't get me. So I get out and I'm walking up. Well, I'm thinking, first of all, for officer safety, or I'm approaching with tactics, right? I'm not just going to walk up and knock on the door and stand in front of the door, because if these are the guys that hit the neighborhood, I know they have at least two firearms. And I don't know if they're third strike felons, they want to shoot it out or whatever. They have what you call a kill zone. Right? And if you stand in front of the door, that's the fucking kill zone. So I walk up, single wide, old ass trailer. And I walk up, and I don't stand in front of the doors. It's cement steps, three steps. And I bang on the side of the trailer. I said, boom, boom, boom. I said, sheriff's office, open the door. I want to talk to you. Nothing. Boom, boom, boom. Sheriff's office, open the door. I want to talk to you. Nothing. Now, I know they ain't gone anywhere. There were no vehicles in the yard to start with. I know they haven't gone anywhere. They hadn't been able to get out of the area. So what I did, I'm like, well, what the fuck am I going to do, right? So I took out my Nextel, and I made that cootie, that noise, and I said, 201-259, send me the SWAT team, get me the detectives. I need a search warrant for this trailer on whatever I can't remember the name of the street now, y'all. And I need a search warrant for this trailer. I got barricaded suspects. Give me the SWAT team out here. We need to surround it. And it's a high dangerous situation. I was making shit up, right? But I knew they could hear me. I knew they were listening. And then the door opens and the guy comes out and says, wait, man, what's going on? It was one of the two that I had seen. But he shut the door right behind him as he came out. I said, what do you mean what's going on? And he said, why you calling a SWAT team? I said, that's right, motherfucker. I'm calling a SWAT team. And y'all, you know, I always talk to young guys, never to start out high, always start out low. But I didn't have anywhere to go but high on this one, right? And I really didn't have anything to go on but gut instinct. And I said, come down off them steps. And he came down, and I pushed him against the trailer. And I patted him. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm Pat Frisky for officer safety. And you don't got any firearms on you. I ain't got shit on me. And I turned him around, let him go, and I said, and I got it right in his face. I said, motherfucker, you have screwed the fucking pooch. He said, what are you talking about? I said, you know what? Don't even say anything. You need to listen to me, because what I'm about to tell you is the most important shit you've ever heard in your entire fucking life. I said, I know what you did last night. I know what you homies and your crew did last night. I'm not going to ask you a question about it. I'm here to tell you some cold, hard facts of how you fucked yourself. You have just shit in your nest, young man. I said, you're screwed. I said, how old are you? He said, I'm 19. I had his attention for sure, y'all. Now, I know this other asshole sitting in the trailer listening also. So I had to come up with some good shit. And I said, listen, y'all hit all those vehicles and those sheds on Parham last night. I said, but he started to say something. No, motherfucker, shut up. Listen to me. And I'm right in his face. I'm giving my, I'm going to kill you look, right? And I'm my crazy eyed look. And I said, you fucked up. I said, one of the vehicles that you hit was my shit. I said, but that's not even the problem. The pistol that you got out of it, the revolver, because you know what the fuck I'm talking about, because it says police special on it. And it's an old, old revolver. I said, but what you don't know is the story behind the revolver. And boy, his eyes are kind of big. I said, you have stolen a piece of American history. I said, do you know who the 28th president of the United States was? And it's like, oh, I said, no, I don't guess you fucking do. I said his name was Woodrow Wilson. Y'all don't know if that's the 28th president or not. I was making it up as I went along. I said, his name is Woodrow Wilson. I said, I am named after him. My name is Woodrow after him. I said, you know why? And he said, no, sir, why? I said, because that pistol saved the president's life. He was at Hotel Monteleone in New Orleans in a poker game in 1932. And one of the guys that he beat left the room and they thought he was going to get more money. But he came back in with a knife and he tried to stab the president. And my great, great grandfather pulled that pistol out and shot him between the eyes and killed that motherfucker. And the president's life was saved by that pistol that you took out of my vehicle last night. That's a piece of national history, motherfucker, that you stole. And then you stole it from me. And I said, I want my motherfucking pistol back and I want it back right this fucking second. And he was like, oh, and I said, no, I want it. And if you say anything other than that you have it, it's going to be hell or jail for you, son. And he was like, oh, and I said, no. Where's my fucking pistol? And he said, well, if I get it back for you, am I going to get in trouble? I said, motherfucker, if you don't get it back for me, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. SWAT's team's on its way. We're going to roll in here. They're going to have to eliminate these big ass dope dogs that you got in your yard. I said, have you ever seen a flashbang go off? We're going to throw flashbangs to every one of these windows on this piece of shit trailer, and it's going to blow your windows out, probably blow the sides of your trailer out. I said, and then they're coming in armed to the teeth. Well, guess what? We know you got two pistols in there, and you might be holding one of them. So it's hell or jail. You going somewhere today? It's one of the two, hell or jail. So you're fucked no matter what, because I know you got my shit, and I want my pistol back. And I'm not promising you anything other than you're going somewhere today, hell or jail. What's it going to be, motherfucker? And you know, I was just all crazy up on him. And I said, you know what? Fuck that. I said, you've got 2 hours right now. That's about how long it takes to get a search warrant for this piece of shit. And I'm going to have somebody sitting at the end of the road. I'm going to have somebody in the bushes making sure y'all can't leave. And you got 2 hours and your time starts right now. I said, and I'm coming back. And when I come back, it's hell or jail. I ain't playing fucking games with you, boy. You shit in your own nest. You fucking stole from me and you stole a national piece of national history. And I said, the FBI is going to have to get involved. This kid didn't know any better. He's about to cry. And so I turned around. I got my car and I rolled the window down. I'm just giving him the stink eye the whole way, right? And I'm back out. And I said, 2 hours. And I drove around his little circle, around the, like I did the first time when I saw him looking out the back window. And I was going like 2 miles an hour, my window down. And he was just standing out there for like 15 minutes. And I told him about my third lap around, he's still standing out there watching me, right? I mean, he thinks I'm crazy. And I hollered, you got an hour. I mean, you have 105 minutes, whatever I told him. Basically, your clock is running, motherfucker. What are you doing standing in your yard? And I'd give him my card and said, you call me when you get the pistol and I want it, right? So I went around to Parham, but time I could get to my driveway, my phone rings. And I answer it, and he's, hey, Hoss, what the hell are you doing? And it was Ken McMorris, the same one I told you who worked, would do it all the dope jumping on Parham on the first of the month. And I said, what do you mean, bro? And he said, bro, I just got a phone call from one of my CIs, and he said you were over there fucking threatening to kill him and blow his house up and everything else. And he said, whoa, tell me what he said. He said, he called me. He said, Mr. Ken, I need your help. He said, motherfucker was crying, Woody. And he said, I need your help. And he said, son, what's wrong? And Ken told me, he said, I worked with this kid a lot in the past. They are, and I forgot to tell y'all this, he had meth sores and stuff on him when I was talking to him, right, on his face and stuff. So he was kind of tweaking. But he said he'd used him in the past as a CI. He called him up. He's crying. He was like, Mr. Ken, you got to help me. He said, you know, a Detective Woodrow? He said, Woody Overton? He said, yeah. And he said, he was at my house and he said, I got his gun. He says he's going to kill my dogs and blow my house up. And I'm going to hell or jail. Well, Mr. Ken, he said, you got to help me. He said, son, he said, you got that man's pistol? And he said, boy, got quiet. He said, answer me. He said, let me tell you something. Woody Overton is fucking crazy. He said, I don't even go around the dude. He said, he went to your house and he knows you got his gun. You better give that motherfucker up because I'm telling you, there ain't no telling what that crazy motherfucker to do. He said, what you don't know about Woody Overton, he was off from the war in the first Gulf War and he got all messed up in the head from killing people and shit. So if you got his gun, you better give it the fuck up. And he's like, Mr. Ken, can I give it to you? I don't want that dude coming back to my house. Can I give it to you? And I started laughing. I was like, Ken, that's the gun my father-in-law gave me. And I made up a lie about the gun and all this. He said he told me some crazy shit about the pistol saved the president of the United States. And he was, you know, he said he was gibberish and going on and on. I'm like, dude, will you please go over there and get that shit? And he said, and Kim was working narcotics at the time. And then he said, I'm going to get with the detectives and we'll go over there and see what's up. He said, I'll get your shit back for you. So I waited a while and Ken called me back later. He said, man, he said, I don't know what you did to that boy, but you had them some kind of shook up. He said that they ended up making 3 arrests. The boy gave my pistol back, the other pistol back. He said they recovered all kinds of stolen merchandise from the neighborhood. Not everything, because on a big burgers like that, trying to recover everything is like standing in the middle of a hurricane with a feather pillow and cutting it open and shaking all the feathers out and then trying to pick up each individual feather, right? Some of it they would have taken and traded for dope that, you know, right away that night. But he was able to get my firearm back. A lot of the stuff that belonged in the neighborhood back, car stereos and stuff they hadn't got rid of. He said, Woody, we arrested 3 of them and we got full confessions out of them. I said, look, I didn't advise them, Miranda, but I wasn't trying to question the motherfucker either. I was just going on, you know, pure blind gut luck instinct, you know. And so they got them and they booked them in. All of them were adults and they did it. I mean, they hit the neighborhood. They stole all the shit, but got the pistol back. Fast forward. You know what I did? I loaded my shit. I went back inside. I changed into my hunting clothes. I got back in my truck and I went hunting for the rest of the week. The home life be damned, right? So had a good, great week hunting, come back, get to the courthouse. The very first thing I do is look up and see what district attorney has been assigned case. And it was Greg Murphy. And I called him and said, hey, Greg. He said, man, I'm reading your shit got stolen, huh? And he said, but they were able to get it back. I said, yeah. I said, you do me a favor, please, and make an example out of these fuck sticks because, you know, my reputation is, and everybody in that neighborhood is a huge sheriff's office supporter and a huge DA supporter. He said, don't worry about it. And they ended up giving him 12, he pled. There was no trial, no motion to suppress. I mean, he pled to 12 years for the vehicle burglaries. Now, 12 years is a shitload of time for a vehicle burglary in the grand scheme of things. In the past, they would give them like probation or whatever. And so to get them to plead down to 12 years to plead to 12 years is a big deal. And it wouldn't have happened had, you know, I not been involved. Fast forward many years later, I was with the state police. I'd been divorced from that person for a long time. And I get a phone call, and it's a probation parole officer that I knew and that I actually worked at Southeastern with before, and I'm not going to say his name. And he said, Woody, he said, you got robbed way back when on Parham Avenue. I said, yep, sure did. He said, you remember the fella? I said, yep, sure did. He said, look, he's coming up for parole. And he said, he's been a great inmate. He said, he's got no write-ups. He made trustee. And basically, once he got off the dope, he turned out to be a decent guy. And he said, he's coming up for parole, but the shit's been flagged. They wanted me to call you and see if you have a problem with him getting paroled or do you want the parole board to deny him? And I said, I don't give a shit, man. I said, yeah, I've been going up from there for forever, like probably almost the whole time he's been incarcerated. And I think he'd done like 5 or 6 years. And I told him, I said, I don't care, dude. Tell him, don't ever come around me again. And if he ever sees me again, you know, he better turn and go the other way before I see him. So, but he got out, and even getting out on paper, the 12 years, his sentence would have long been up by now before I told this story. So that's it. Not a great big drama story like last week, and you know, with the murder and the death of the baby and all that, but just a story that when I did the first of the month, it reminded me of being on Parham when we got robbed that time, and how I got lucky and scared the shit out of that dude to crack the case. So, but anyway, I appreciate y'all. A little bit of more of a lighthearted story. Love and appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. And wouldn't have a show if it wasn't for the lifers, right? So patron members, letting you know we love you and appreciate you. If you can't be a patron member, I ask that you just subscribe to us and like us and leave a review on iTunes and all that good podcast or stuff I'm supposed to say. Instagram at Real Life Real Crime or at Overton Woody. I'm posting some funny stuff on there pretty much every day, y'all. Check it out. Follow me on that, and we're about to start doing more videos for our YouTube channel. Check that out. The Courtney Coco case, we are in the same holding pattern, and I know people are like, COVID this, COVID that. I'm telling you, I have from a reliable source that COVID is the actual holdup because certain meetings can't take place, and I can't say any more about that. So I'm telling you, it doesn't do any good to put more pressure on them right now or to bitch about it or complain because it cannot move forward at this time. But it is actually being worked, and that it is my 1,000% firm belief arrests are going to be made in that case. And to you, suspect one, suspect two, kiss my ass. I heard you were going to sue me. Get your lawyer and sue me. I would love to be able to tell everything that I know in civil court on Courtney Coco's case that I didn't get to put out on the podcast because I didn't want to do anything to jeopardize the investigation. I would love for you to just fucking see me. So go ahead and do it because I know you listen, you little bitches. Miss Barbara Blunt's case, I am moving forward, okay? You don't know. I can't say everything, et cetera, but I think the next episode you hear from Real Life Real Crime will be a different angle on Miss Barbara Blunt's than I'm going to do the episode on. So get ready for it. It's got some real interesting stuff. But please share Miss Barbara Blunt's case. Lay off the Coco. Lay off Alexandria PD. They've done what they can do to this point, and it's moving forward. But y'all, on Miss Barbara Blunt's case, I'm still getting tips. So every time y'all share it, the case, I get the tips. And I'm about to leave tonight to go to my place in the woods, and I'm going to sit down with that case file, and I'm not leaving, not getting done until I have the next. Like I have a lot of information. Let's put it like that. So just keep calling in your tips. Sheriff Ard is 1,000% committed to working on this case, and he has the resources on it. It is not a cold, it's not a frozen cold case anymore, okay? Because of the lifers, because y'all care. And a lot of you send your tips, and you're like, oh, I feel stupid for sending this in. Bull, there is no stupid tip. Send in your tips. Every tip helps. You never know what's going to be the one tip that breaks the case wide open. So, and I appreciate you and just love y'all to death. Let's talk about LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, right? That's my personal mission for Real Life, Real Crime. Lifers, if you haven't signed up, please go, and it'll be in the show notes, to LOPA.org and sign up. Takes 2 minutes. Hey, if you sign up, take a screenshot of it and we'll post it in the crew, right? It's so important. And I did a podcast with them that's about to come out in a couple of weeks, I think. And I want y'all to listen to it when this little 5-month-old baby saved 4 lives, her organs did. And I've had other cases where organ donors, we have lifers that are alive today. Right now, one of them got a double lung transplant. Okay. Well, guess what? Somebody had to die to get her those lungs, right? She wouldn't be breathing. if it wasn't for it. So there's a, when you die, they have a real strict guideline. It's not like they can go a week later, or I mean, they have a certain time frame. Actually, you still have to be alive. I'm not most technical savvy on it. We'll have the people on one day to explain to you, but you have to be alive, like brain dead, hooked up to the machine for them to go in and get the organs that they need to help these other people that are dying. They're living on machines and waiting on these organs and shit, man. You're not going to care. You're going to be dead anyway, right? They still got your body to bury. I mean, let them use it. And there's some things that they do with tissue for studies and stuff like that. So it's just, you want to be a hero. Life was a real hero. Go sign up for LOPA. Go sign up to be an organ donor and give the gift of life. Okay. Give the gift of life. And I have a really moving story. Toby Tom Play, our executive producer, one of his best friends' daughters died recently. And her organs were able to go and help a bunch of people. I want Toby on. I want him to be able to tell that story. These are real people. These are real lives. And so be a hero. Go sign up at LOPA.org. It'll be in the show notes. Go sign up. Be an organ donor. Be a hero. Save lives. Lifers, save lives. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
Dead Monday. Oh,
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.